All right, so we're diving into cloud application security today. Got this excerpt from domainfour.pdf, and it's really got me thinking. Like, we always hear about locking down servers and stuff, but this is saying it's not just about that, right?
Right, you're spot on.
It's like the applications themselves are where things get really interesting.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. The applications, that's where, you know, often that's where the real crown jewels are.
Mm.
And, you know, this source makes a great point about shared security responsibility, which I really like. It's kind of like, well, imagine a neighborhood watch program.
Right.
Everyone's got to play a part in keeping the community safe.
Okay. Yeah, I see where you're going with that. So in the cloud, it's not just on, like, the security team, right?
Yeah.
It's developers, users, like, everyone's got skin in the game.
Exactly. Everyone's got a role to play. And the source even dives into some common pitfalls that organizations kind of stumble over when it comes to building that security-first culture.
I'm all ears. What kind of pitfalls are we talking about?
Well, one of the big ones is lack of support from the top, you know, from senior management.
Yeah.
If they're not on board with prioritizing security, it trickles down and it creates this, well, almost a sense of apathy. You know what I mean?
Right.
Then you've got situations where the company culture itself might be kind of resistant to change, or maybe there's just a lack of skilled security personnel.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the budget monster rears its ugly head. Budget constraints for training can be a real roadblock.
Ugh, yes, the budget. Always the budget. But wait, hold on. Didn't the source mention some, like, creative ways to tackle training without, you know, needing $1 bazillion?
They did, yeah. They actually suggest looking into online courses or even bringing in a trainer for, like, in-house sessions, which I thought was a good point.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder that security training doesn't have to be this extravagant, out-of-reach thing.
Okay, so that's getting everyone on board, but let's talk about the actual, you know, threats themselves. Looking at this egregious 11 list from the source, it's like it reminds me of those old most wanted posters you'd see in the post office.
Right.
Data breaches, injection flaws. It's a whole rogues gallery of vulnerabilities.
It is. And then, of course, you've got the OWASP POP 10, which is like another list that's just packed with potential troublemakers.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is, these threats aren't just theoretical, you know, they have real world consequences that can impact anyone, not just big tech companies.
Yeah. Speaking of real world consequences, the source's take on misconfiguration really struck me. They compare it to, like, leaving your front door wide open.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a terrifying thought.
Big time.
It seems like such a basic thing, but the potential fallout could be huge.
Absolutely. And that's precisely why the source really stresses the importance of the secure software development lifecycle.
The SSDLC.
Yes, the SSDLC. It's about, instead of tacking security on as an afterthought, it's about baking it into each stage of development, from the initial design all the way to deployment and maintenance.
Okay, so walk me through this SSDLC. What are the key phases we're talking about here?
So it starts with defining the requirements.
Okay.
Then it moves to design, development, testing, deployment, and then finally operations and maintenance.
Okay.
But the key here is that security considerations are woven into each of those stages.
Got it. And the source mentions a couple of specific frameworks that can help with that process, right? I'm seeing NIST Secure Software Development Framework and the OWASP Software Assurance Maturity Model. Okay. Are those kind of the, like, the big players in this space?
They're definitely two of the most well-known and widely used frameworks, yeah.
Okay.
They offer a structured approach to building security into the development process. And, you know, what I think is really compelling is the argument that using an SSDLC can actually save money in the long run.
Oh, interesting.
It's like catching a leak in a pipe early on.
Right.
Rather than waiting for it to turn into a major flood that requires expensive repairs.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. So we've laid the groundwork with the SSDLC, but let's get down to brass tacks here. What are some of the, like, common vulnerabilities that developers absolutely need to be on the lookout for?
I think that's where the OWASP Top 10 comes in handy again. It highlights those most critical security risks that web applications face. And, you know, if we focus on the top five, you've got injection flaws, broken authentication, sensitive data exposure, XML external entities, and broken access control.
Okay.
Those are the ones that, you know, attackers frequently exploit, and each one of those can have a significant impact.
Yeah, it's easy to get lost in all the technical jargon sometimes, but I thought the source actually did a good job of grounding those vulnerabilities in, like, real-world scenarios.
Yeah.
Like, they point out that cloud-specific risks often stem from things that seem so simple, like misconfiguration, using tools improperly, not validating input correctly.
Right. And those seemingly small oversights,
they
can open the door to some pretty major problems. Data breaches, account takeovers.
Yeah.
It can snowball really quickly.
Right.
And the source doesn't shy away from painting a vivid picture of just how damaging these vulnerabilities can be.
I think it's important to remember that even if you're not a developer yourself, like even having a basic understanding of the tools and techniques used for cloud application security, it can be really empowering.
Absolutely.
You're able to ask the right questions, make more informed decisions, you know, regardless of your role.
100%. And the source does a good job of providing a concise overview of some key security components.
Okay.
Things like web application firewalls or WFs, database activity monitoring, XML firewalls, API gateways, and of course, good old cryptography.
Right.
It's like building a, you know, a multi-layered defense system.
Okay, so break a couple of those down for our listeners. Like, what about web application firewalls or WFs and encryption? Those seem like pretty fundamental pieces of the puzzle.
They are. So think of a bouncer standing guard at the entrance to your application. It's filtering out malicious traffic, trying to prevent those attacks before they can even reach your system. Encryption, on the other hand, it's like sealing your data in an armored truck, making sure it stays protected, even if it's intercepted during transit.
So we've got the applications themselves locked down, but what about controlling who has access to them in the first place?
Yeah.
This is where identity and access management, or IAM, comes in, right? I was thinking of that classic line, who are you and what are you allowed to do?
Yeah, you nailed it. In the cloud, where access needs to be carefully controlled, right? You don't want unauthorized users getting their hands on sensitive data. IAM becomes absolutely critical.
Yeah.
And the source dives into a whole array of IAM tools and strategies. We're talking about federated identity, identity providers, single sign-on, multi-factor authentication, even cloud access security brokers. It's a lot to unpack.
Let's try to unpack at least a few of those for our listeners. Like, what exactly is federated identity and how does that work in practice?
So federated identity is essentially a way to allow users to access resources across multiple systems using a single set of credentials. So think of it like a universal key that can unlock doors in different buildings.
Okay.
It simplifies things for users, streamlines that login process.
That sounds convenient, but I'm guessing there are security implications to consider as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. If those shared credentials are compromised, it's like giving an attacker access to multiple buildings with a single key. That's why it's so important to have, you know, robust security measures in place, like multi-factor authentication, strong password policies, all of that.
Makes sense. The source also mentions identity providers as a key component of cloud IAM. What's their role in this whole ecosystem?
So think of identity providers as the gatekeepers of user information. They're responsible for authenticating users and providing information about their identities to other systems. So that could be a service from a cloud provider like Azure Active Directory or AWS IAM, or it could be a third-party solution.
And then we have single sign-on, or SSO, which always seems like a bit of a double-edged sword to me.
Yeah, I get it.
On the one hand, it's super convenient for users, but I imagine it also introduces some security challenges.
You're spot on. So SSO lets users log in once and access multiple applications without having to re-enter their credentials every time, which is great for user experience. But just like with federated identity, if that single point of access is compromised, it can have a cascading effect.
So again, it's all about striking that balance between convenience and security.
Mm.
What are some ways to mitigate the risks associated with SSO?
Well, having strong authentication mechanisms is non-negotiable. That's where multi-factor authentication, or MFA, really shines.
Right.
By requiring users to provide multiple forms of authentication, like a password and a one-time code from their phone, MFA makes it way harder for attackers to gain unauthorized access.
Yeah, like having a double lock on your door. It definitely adds an extra layer of security. Now, the source also mentions cloud access security brokers, or CASBs. What's their role in all of this?
Think of a CASB as like this vigilant security checkpoint standing between your users and the cloud applications they're trying to access. They can enforce security policies, monitor user activity, even detect and block malicious traffic. They're constantly on the lookout for any suspicious behavior, making sure that only authorized users are getting in and that they're not doing anything they shouldn't be.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here, from, the importance of building that security-first culture to this whole array of tools and techniques used to protect applications in the cloud. It's clear that cloud application security is a multifaceted beast. But where do we go from here? What are some of the key takeaways our listeners should keep in mind?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that cloud application security, it's not like a one-and-done deal, It's an ongoing process, requires that proactive and collaborative approach. And it's not just about implementing the latest, shiny tools and technologies. It's about fostering that security-first mindset throughout the organization from the top down,
Right. And it sounds like the secure software development lifecycle, that SSDLC we were talking about before, that's like a crucial piece of that, right? If you're baking security into every stage of the development, it seems like you're already miles ahead of the game.
You got it. That's the whole point of the SSDLC, minimizing those vulnerabilities right from the get-go rather than trying to patch them up after the fact. And the source emphasizes that finding and fixing those vulnerabilities early on, it can actually save you time and money in the long run.
That makes sense. It's like preventative maintenance, right? A little effort up front can save you bigger headaches down the road.
100%. And speaking of prevention, the source dives into some like really practical advice for avoiding common vulnerabilities during development. They really hammer home the importance of that OWASP top 10 list we talked about. And they urge developers to pay close attention to those cloud-specific risks, like misconfiguration, misuse of tools.
Yeah, one thing that stuck out to me was the source's emphasis on using verified secure software, like whether it's from a trusted vendor or, carefully vetted open source solution. It all comes down to like knowing where your ingredients are coming from, so to speak.
I love that analogy. It's like making sure the ingredients in your cake are fresh and safe to eat, right? And it's not just about the software itself, it's about the whole supply chain. The source stresses having, clear security requirements baked into those vendor contracts, doing your due diligence before you entrust sensitive data to any external party.
Yeah, it's like doing a background check on your suppliers.
And, speaking of different aspects of security, let's not forget about cloud application architectures. The source mentions microservices, cloud native, serverless, cloud-based. Each one of those has its own unique set of security considerations.
It sounds like a lot to think about when it comes to designing these like secure cloud applications.
There is. But the good news is there's a ton of tools and services out there to help organizations secure their applications, regardless of what specific architecture they choose. We've already talked about some of the big ones like WAFs, DAM, XML firewalls, but the source goes into even more detail about their specific functions and benefits.
When we were talking about those supplemental security components earlier, API gateways really piqued my interest. Can you tell me a little bit more about what they do and why they're so important?
So API gateways, they're essentially the guardians of your application's API, right?
Right.
They act as that secure entry point to your backend services, controlling and monitoring traffic, enforcing rate limits, handling authorization. Think of them like the bouncers at a club, right?
Gotcha.
Making sure only the right people get in.
And then, of course, we can't forget about encryption. Seems like that's like the cornerstone of any security strategy, especially in the cloud where data is, constantly on the move.
Absolutely. The source kind of breaks encryption down into like three key areas: data at rest, data in motion, and key management. Encrypting data at rest is like putting a lock on your filing cabinet. Even if someone manages to break into your office, they can't access that sensitive information stored inside. Encrypting data in motion, that's like transporting those files in an armored truck, making sure they're protected during transit. And then key management, that's like having a secure vault for the keys to that filing cabinet and armored truck. It's all about safeguarding those cryptographic keys that are used to encrypt and decrypt your data.
I think it's really cool how the source manages to make these complex concepts so relatable. Like when they talk about sandboxing as a way to, test code in this safe and isolated environment, it's like giving developers a playground where they can experiment without breaking anything important.
Love that analogy. Sandboxing is, especially crucial when you're testing code that might be, potentially malicious or, for developers who are new to cloud application development, it gives them a safe space to learn and experiment without any real-world consequences. And it's not just for developers either. Sandboxing can also be used to execute code securely in production environments, which adds that extra layer of protection against attacks.
The source also touched on application virtualization and orchestration, which sound a bit more, well, complicated.
Yeah.
Could you break those down for us?
Sure. In a nutshell, application virtualization, it's about isolating applications from the underlying operating system,
okay,
which can boost security and portability.
Mm-hmm.
Containerization is like a popular approach to this, where applications are packaged up with all their dependencies and can run consistently across different platforms. And then you've got orchestration tools like Kubernetes that manage those containers and ensure they're deployed and scaled efficiently.
Sounds like there are a lot of moving parts.
There are, but the benefits can be huge, especially for organizations moving to the cloud and, you know, needing to make sure their applications are secure and portable.
Speaking of crucial aspects of cloud security,
yes,
I think it's time we circle back to identity and access management, or IAM.
Yeah, for sure.
Seems like it's like the bedrock of everything we've been talking about today.
You're absolutely right. IAM is all about controlling who has access to what resources in the cloud, making sure only authorized users can perform certain actions. And the source, they really delve into a whole range of IAM solutions, from federated identity to cloud access security brokers. It's
yeah,
a deep, deep rabbit hole.
Let's try to, like, you know, break down a few of those key concepts for our listeners.
Okay.
What exactly is federated identity, and how does it work in a practical sense?
So federated identity is a way to allow users to access resources across multiple systems using just one set of credentials, like having a universal key that unlocks doors in different buildings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This can really simplify things for users, reduce the number of passwords they need to remember. However, it also introduces some security challenges, right? Because if those credentials are compromised, the attacker gains access to multiple systems.
So again, it's that trade-off between convenience and security, as with many things in life.
Exactly. And that's why it's so crucial to implement strong security measures alongside federated identity. Things like multi-factor authentication, robust password policies, these can help mitigate those risks.
The source also highlights identity providers as a key element in cloud IAM. Can you shed some light on what they do and why they're so important?
So think of identity providers as the gatekeepers of user information.
Welcome.
They're the ones responsible for authenticating users and providing information about their identities to other systems. Could be a service offered by a cloud provider like Azure Active Directory or AWS IAM, or it could be a third-party solution.
Now, single sign-on, or SSO, is another concept that always seems to spark a lot of debate.
For sure.
Super convenient for users, but I can see how it could also raise some security red flags.
Right.
What's your take on SSO?
SSO definitely has its pros and cons. So it allows users to log in once and access multiple applications without having to re-enter their credentials each time, which is great for user experience. But, you know, like with federated identity, there's a potential downside. If that single point of access is compromised, it can have a ripple effect across multiple applications.
So strong authentication measures are absolutely essential when using SSO.
Absolutely. And that's where multi-factor authentication, or MFA, steps in as the hero. MFA adds that extra layer of security by requiring users to provide multiple forms of authentication. It's like having both a key and a combination lock on your door makes it much harder for attackers to break in.
The source also mentions cloud access security brokers, or CASBs, as like a valuable tool in the cloud security arsenal. What exactly do CASBs do, and why are they becoming so popular?
Think of a CASB as like this vigilant security checkpoint standing between your users and the cloud applications they're trying to access.
Okay.
They can enforce security policies, monitor user activity, even detect and block malicious traffic, constantly on the lookout for anything suspicious, you know,
yeah,
making sure that only authorized users are getting in and that they're not up to any shenanigans.
Okay, so we've covered a tremendous amount of ground today, from building that security-first culture to, you know, the intricacies of IAM, all the tools and techniques in between.
Mm.
But as we wrap up this deep dive, what's like the one key message you want our listeners to walk away with?
You know, if there's one thing I really hope our listeners take away from this whole deep dive, it's that cloud application security, it's a shared responsibility. You know, it's not just the job of the security team, the developers, it's on all of us.
Right.
As we rely more and more on these cloud applications in our everyday lives, we need to be aware of the potential risks.
Right.
And take steps to protect ourselves, protect our data.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it kind of ties back to that, you know, neighborhood watch analogy we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Everyone has a role to play in keeping the community safe.
100%.
But I'm curious, what does that like shared responsibility actually look like in practice? What can like individuals actually do to contribute to a more secure cloud environment?
That's a great question. I think it starts with awareness, honestly.
Right.
Being aware of the potential risks, understanding the importance of strong passwords, multi-factor authentication,
right,
being cautious about phishing attacks. These are all things that individuals can do to make themselves less vulnerable.
So it's about empowering users to be more security conscious rather than just relying on like technology to protect them.
Exactly. Technology is crucial, but it's not a silver bullet, right? We need that multi-layered approach.
Right.
Combine the technology with education and awareness.
Yeah, this whole deep dive has really highlighted how interconnected everything is in the cloud. It's not just about like securing individual applications. It's about securing this whole ecosystem.
That's a great point. And, you know, it makes me think about something the source mentioned about the importance of like thinking holistically about security. It's not just about focusing on the technical stuff.
Right.
We got to consider the human element as well.
What do you mean by the human element?
Well, things like social engineering attacks, right?
Right.
Where attackers try to manipulate people into giving up sensitive information, or insider threats, where someone with legitimate access to a system abuses that access for malicious purposes. These are all examples of how human behavior can really impact security.
So it's not just about building like these impenetrable systems. It's about understanding how people interact with those systems, right?
Yeah.
And how to mitigate the risks that come with human behavior.
Exactly. That's where things like, you know, security awareness training, strong security policies, all that stuff comes into play. It's about creating that culture of security where everyone understands the importance of protecting sensitive data and, you know, they're empowered to take an active role in security.
It's interesting to think about how the cloud has really fundamentally changed the security landscape. It's not just about like building walls around our data anymore, right? It's about securing data that's constantly moving, being accessed from multiple devices, often residing in environments that we don't directly control.
You're absolutely right. The cloud has definitely blurred the lines of those traditional security perimeters.
Yeah.
And it's forced us to rethink how we approach security in general.
One thing that's become clear to me is that cloud application security is not like a static concept. It's constantly evolving as new technologies come out, new threats arise, the way we use the cloud continues to change.
Absolutely. That's why it's so important to stay informed, keep up with the latest trends, the best practices. That's one of the things I love about this field, you know? It's always challenging us to think creatively.
Yeah.
To adapt our strategies to meet that ever-changing threat landscape.
You know, we've covered a ton of ground in this deep dive.
We have.
And I feel like we've only just scratched the surface of this massive topic.
Yeah.
But if there's like one key takeaway I want our listeners to remember, it's that cloud application security is everyone's responsibility.
I couldn't agree more. It's about understanding those risks, being aware of the tools and techniques available to mitigate them, and working together to create a more secure cloud environment for everyone.
Well, folks, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into cloud application security. We've explored so many fascinating concepts today, from building that security-first culture to the nitty-gritty of IAM and all the tools and techniques in between. I hope this deep dive has been insightful, maybe even a little bit empowering for you. Remember, knowledge is power. The more you understand about cloud security, the better equipped you'll be to protect your data, your business. And if you're hungry for more, be sure to check out the show notes for links to additional resources. We always love hearing from our listeners, so connect with us on social media. Let us know what you thought of this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay secure.